in the building or is it outside?
Attention, attention, Cybercast listeners. You're tuned into the show for cyber enthusiasts and experts alike. Today, we're rolling back to the Nordic Baltic Security Summit 2024, courtesy of NeverHack Estonia, to bring you discussions from the top minds in cybersecurity. If you enjoy what we're sharing, show us some love, share, like, comment, and let us know how we're doing. So, without further ado, press the play button.
And welcome to another episode of Gubercast. Today we are recording at the Nordic Baltic Security Summit from Kultuurikatele, and this time we will dive deep into the world of cybercrime.
Cybercrime.
And explore the most common cybercrimes reported to the police. We have a special guest here, Aru Amber, the head of Cybercrime Bureau at the Estonian Police and Border Guard Board. Aga will share his insight a little bit and experience, explaining how the crime trends have shifted and what technologies are used during the investigations. And I think most importantly, how we as a citizens and organizations can better protect ourselves. Greetings, Aga.
Hello. Thank you for the invite.
Please introduce a little bit. What is your background? And what do you do for the job?
So my name is Aga Ambur. I'm the head of the Cybercrime Bureau. And very broadly put, we investigate cybercrime and try to put a stop to cybercrime happening here in Estonia.
How big is the team with whom you are doing all of that?
You're starting off with really good questions. Some of those I will say in advance that I might not be able to accurately give an answer to, this being one of them, although I can comment the fact that we have, and it kind of explains how and what kind of importance has cybersecurity had in Estonia. Our team has grown fivefold over the course of the five last years. So I can only comment that we've been constantly increasing in size. But I can't give you the exact number.
Yes, that is totally understandable. Our work here is to ask questions, and if you cannot answer those questions, then that's okay.
Yep, it's just interesting for us because usually it's us who are asking the questions. This time it's the other way around.
So yeah, but okay, composition of the team. Can you describe the composition of the roles and functions of the team?
So one might figure that being law enforcement, we are mostly comprised of police officers, but it's actually totally not that. We are actually a hybrid. I would say it's a split between police officers, sworn police officers, but also public servants, civil servants. That means that we employ a range of different expertise, not just regular police officers, but also people with technical backgrounds who come from our private sector, straight out of universities, straight out of high school, maybe even. So we are a mix of different backgrounds, and I think that's also one of the key things that helps us to be efficient. We have a very broad view on things, so everybody can put something on the table.
Can you highlight, like, what are kind of the most biggest challenges that your team has to face, and how do you tackle them?
So I think we've gone, and also this speaks for the whole nation actually, we've gone a long way from demystifying cybercrime. So back in the days, it was really hard for us to come across and explain things to everyday people, like what do we do, why do we do that, what's the importance of this job that we do. Now it's becoming more obvious and evident for everybody. People then to understand the value and the importance of actually dealing with those issues. So I would say that has been one of the challenges that we've been constantly tackling, but it's now slowly fading away so we can actually focus on the job. But I would say it's still kind of the thing that we run across and it also shows with the incidents. Like we can see in quite a bit of investigations that there are things that could have been done if there was less a mystification about cybersecurity and cybercrime in particular, and actually more preventive measures taken by the victims before throughout the process.
And what are the most typical cybercrimes that you work with?
So one thing is the statistics. So obviously we get the most reports about phishing and different kinds of fraud, because that's what the everyday people are most exposed to. But it's also data breaches and cryptocurrency heists taking place in organizations. But what's different for us from the so in police there are different units investigating cybercrime. Us in National Criminal Police, we stand out in a sense that we have sort of the liberty to choose our cases. So we are actually trying to aim where we can have the most impact. So we try to measure and figure out what would be the points in the kill chain that we can address, so we would have the most impact for the whole criminal environment, but also for the safety of the public.
So the kind of you have the possibility to choose. Does that mean that you have so much crime?
The numbers are high and they are constantly increasing, of course. But I would say it's I think one thing that would reflect what kind of incidents or what kind of investigations we have are real life examples. So at one point we would be investigating a case, for instance, that came out public last week when we went public with three different suspects in related to a cyber attack on three different ministries of Estonia. But also on the other hand, we could be focusing on a criminal service that's offering cryptocurrency laundering for ransomware groups. So there is this kind of and we differentiate and choose those cases based on the impact and the measure of the impact that we assess them to have.
How has the cybercrime changed in time, and what are it's weird to say that, what are the current trends in the cybercrime? So?
So I spilled out the word service. Criminal, the environment is very much service oriented. We are seeing a lot of, and it's called crime as a service. That this phenomenon has been increasing over the course of last year. So back in the time where the criminal was committing all the crime independently with their own knowledge, we have reached over 10, if not 20 years of time, we have reached to a point where the criminal does not really have to be technologically savvy in order to, pull off a ransomware attack. They just find the services who are offering those different
components
for the attack, and then they just stink them good together and commit the attack. So that's kind of what's different in this environment, and what this actually means is that the people who are executing the attacks, they are not technically very savvy, but they obtain the services that are very, very efficient and very professional at what they do. So it's for us it's becoming more harder to defend against, because we have to defend against, say, there is somebody who is brokering access to different systems. And they are very good at getting access to the systems. Mm-hmm. So that's their only job. They're focusing on getting access to the systems. It's not like the attacker or the criminal has to focus one day of the week into getting access. No, they do that on a daily basis. So that kind of
specialization.
Yeah, exactly. So that kind of it makes our job much more difficult, because it creates a gap of skill, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So. Can you open a case for us? Can you open a case that you can talk about that has been under investigation?
Sure. Let me just run really quickly through my mind what would be a good example. I think one of the things that gained some attention in the media, I think it was a month ago, there was a young kid who 2 years ago, roughly, was able to breach a parcel system parcel information system for post packages, mm-hmm. And he leaked the data set that he obtained from that attack. And this was an interesting case in a sense that, along with leaking the data, the person also published the research on the attack. So they published key details on how they committed, what was the vector, and what kind of measures didn't the company take, which allowed them, the person to get into the network. And in doing so, we were able to identify the person, and we were able to interrogate him. And it was quite fast evident for us that it wasn't really the motive for the person wasn't really in getting access and leaking the data for personal gain or financial gain. The person had a track record of actually doing pen testing for different websites and companies. At this time, he just chose wrong instruments in publishing that to the company. So in that sense, it was also a combination of not just bringing the person to justice, but also trying to have preventive measures into steering a young person to a lawful
path.
So we don't want to lose those people. There is loads of opportunities here in Estonia in getting work at the InfoSec community. And I think like age shouldn't be a barrier in a lot of those cases, because the kid was really bright, and it would have been very sad if they had gone the route of cybercrime, because the next time the punishments could have been much, much worse.
I think this was already quite a good example, like bringing the cybercrime part to the real life. But can we continue with like demystifying it a little bit? Because currently we know that, yes, in the case that you gave us as an example, there was a data leak. But what could be like other impacts on the citizens that can happen?
So yeah, one thing for the citizen is the fact that their personal data could get leaked, right? But it's also another thing could be that their financial instruments get leaked, so their money, essentially. That's usually what the criminals are after. The motivation is usually, in the end, it's money. The data is just a means to get to the money eventually. So, but in that regard, it could also be nowadays we are seeing a rise in cryptocurrency heists. So again, it's inevitable. People do trust different companies with their cryptocurrency, but there aren't really good ways to verify whether that company, how they operate, how secure is the, how well are the finances maintained. So we've seen cryptocurrency heists, and in most of those cases, and we're talking about hundreds of millions of worth of cryptocurrency here, and we've seen in those cases like very basic things have not been implemented into companies.
Mm-hmm. To the service.
Yeah, for the service that lost the customer's money. And it's not even information security related measures. It could be simple things like HR. We can see one of the vectors that the criminals get in is through, for instance, developers. So they will try to get into the computer of the developer of the company. This allows them access to the network, and then they would laterally get into the systems they want to and get the money out. Now, we've seen cases where there are remote workers across the globe for a company. And when we have pinpointed like, hey, this machine was probably taken over, there's this employee with this machine that got hacked, like, could you give us the information on that machine? We would like to investigate further. Yeah. This comes back to us like, hey, we don't have an employee with that kind of name. Mm-hmm. What this tells you is that this company had no oversight of their employees even. Those mm-hmm. employees had remote access. They could, you know, access the code base, the services internally, everything. And that's how the criminals got in and got into the network and stole the money.
Just apply for a job, right?
Exactly. So even simple things as not having an overview of your employees, and maybe if they quit, closing their access, like simple things like that, they can make a whole lot of difference. And that's the key thing here.
So now I have a question for you that I believe you won't answer me this question, but I have to ask, you know. So what kind of tools and techniques are being used by police?
Yeah, that's a really broad question. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, we cover a different range of expertise. So it's not just cybercrime investigations, but it's also we are responsible for the whole digital forensics in the Estonia police. Mm-hmm. So that's again another avenue. We collect cyber domain related intelligence. So that's another avenue. So this spectrum of tools really broadens up. But we do a lot of development in house as well. So we have figured out over the years that a lot of things that you can get on the market, there is this one functionality that you need, but there is a lot that you don't really need. So it kind of boils down to like, what do you get for the taxpayers' money? So we try to be very optimal in that, and we only obtain the software that we see there is a return of investment on. Otherwise, we're going to build it on our own.
Mm-hmm. So what does return on investment mean for you?
So, well, in this case, it's you buy that functionality versus you build it in-house and you can tailor it to your needs.
Okay.
I think in our last conversation, the OSINT was also mentioned, and in cyber warfare, it's a big part. How much is it part of your daily life?
When we go and investigate something, we try to... So our set goals are simple, like don't leave any stone unturned. If that brings us to the world of what's going on in the internet, we'll definitely go and check what's going on. So there is probably no reason to doubt that we are also in the, you know, we are in the environments that the criminals operate in, and if we need to, in the scope of an investigation, we will obviously go after the evidence that's published by someone in some kind of web page. That's part of our everyday life, really.
What can organizations do to, like, well, things happen, and how to be prepared if some company gets falls a victim of cybercrime? How can company prepare for the cooperation with the police forces
What can we do by ourselves?
Yeah, so there's two things. One of the first thing is always notify. So notify the respective authorities that something has happened. That's guaranteed. That's the first thing to do. If you don't do that, then likely there are like. It will not have any effect for others and not for yourself either. So first thing to do is notify. The second thing that once you have notified the respective authorities, be it us, the police, or the information system authority, CERT-EE, or maybe the data protection inspectorate, have the logs ready. So be prepared to explain what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's another crucial thing. If you don't have that, it's really hard for us to A, help you, and B, help solve the case. So we need the data to operate. Usually when something happens, that's for us, that's when the job starts. So we will need as much data to work with as possible. This will help us get started faster.
So what are the most common misconceptions about the reporting process?
Well, I think, like, sadly, there is some kind of faith or some kind of belief that if you report something, nothing will happen. One of the things to consider always is we operate within the law. We have to follow the rules set by the law. That's one of the things. That's why some things take time. Cybercrime is international. Very likely that the criminals and the data and the services used in the attack resides outside of Estonia. that also takes time. So the process from notifying to actually getting some closure is a long process.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. The other thing is that it might be like, yes, something happened and will I get a closure or not? That's one thing. But the other thing is you notifying of the case could help prevent this thing happening to someone else. So it will help us to prioritize this, to actually see like what are the modus operandi happening, and we can actually, it turns into actionable intelligence that we can use to react on and prevent future crime, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another aspect of notifying, and that's something that we value really, really much.
Our time is starting to run out. Then
so last question for you.
Yes, let's continue on the notification part. How can like people notify you about, I don't know, if they get some kind of scam call, if they see some weird actions in some Facebook groups that they happen to be part of? How to give this information to you?
So in order to contact us, the police directly, you can use the our website, polizei.de or cyber.polizei.de. We also have an email that's listed there on the site. And also, if we're talking about cyber incidents in general, it always helps to notify the information system authority as well, CERT-EE. They also have the form or the email address on their website. So in Estonian, it's RIA, RIA CERT-EE. So it also always helps to notify either one of us or both of us in those kind of cases.
I know that the Estonian police also have those web
constables.
Yes, I don't know how to call it.
Yeah, so web constables, you can always reach out to them on social networks as well. They will point you to the correct resource. They might ask you for initial information, and then they will point out where to submit this information. So they can always be reached, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you for this insight. And I think we can wrap up this episode with those thoughts. I will quickly check if we have any listener questions. Not yet. So, thank you, Ago.
Thank you, Ago.
Thank you for the invite again.
Enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.